number one, obviously, all glory to God.
And then there's a CAN bus, the most efficient organization on the planet.
I'm going to put a plug in because I think we're in the damn state of Iowa.
Bobby Telfer, I'm the baddest man on the planet.
Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to In the Room, a wrestling podcast from the Des Moines Register. I'm Cody Goodwin, the Register's wrestling writer, and I'm glad you're here back again with our buddy Jason Bryant. Jason, it is May 11th. What shirt we got on today?
Let's see. Since I'm still going alphabetically through the drawer that I organized before we talked about this the last episode, I'm into the C's now. So I've gone CSU Bakersfield today, Cal Poly.
Nice.
So this is an update. I've got a couple Cal Poly shirts. This is the newest one I've got. Interesting story about Cal Poly. The head coach, John Cerritos, I have known since he was a freshman in high school, was in my wrestling club. Well, wasn't my wrestling club. The club's been around a lot longer than I have. And let's just be clear, nobody's going to actually wrestle for a club that bears my name or any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, John was a freshman when I was a senior. He was at Bethel then before he transferred to Great Bridge. And he was in the club, the PWA. It's the club that puts on the Virginia Duels, the tournament that is single-handedly responsible for my move into the sport of wrestling when I was 15 years old. So I've actually known Cerritos since he had hair, and it was a curly mop of red hair. And there's another story about him shaving off said curly mop of red hair in a duel meet against my high school when he was a sophomore after he'd gone to Great Bridge. But he's heard me tell that story enough. Everybody knows the pain that he went through standing on his head to make weight there, only to receive a forfeit. But that pain notwithstanding, there's the shirt. And I've been doing a hat assist basically because I've got a bunch of wrestling hats that, you know, off screen here. So it's, you know, I'll tag the hat assist. Yesterday was Buena Vista. Today it's the Olympic team hat. While it doesn't say wrestling, Tim Johnson gave me this hat in London in 2012. He was there doing research because, of course, him and Doug Brooker have been friends for a long, long time through Iowa Public Television and the Big Ten Network. So there's a wrestling tie to the five rings on my hat. And Tim Johnson gave this one to me in London. And then we got the Cal Poly Mustangs. So Coach Cerritos doing a good job out there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't have nearly as cool of a story for mine. I've got the Grow Women's Wrestling shirt on today.
I don't have one of those yet.
Scrap life.
How do I not? I've had every wrestling shirt ever. I mean, I got the Stalemates Last Chance Open tournament upstairs. I mean, I got one made for Kyven from like my Sticker Mule account where it's like, you want the mic, bro, buddy?
Yeah,
you
know, when he was talking to DeSanto.
When Ross from Wrestle Chicago put that graphic together. So I've got that one too, but yeah, I mean, I've got shirts that aren't even a thing that I will wear, but yeah, I don't have that one yet.
You should probably get that one since it's, you know, four D1 programs now, women's wrestling, but a lot in the NCAA stuff. Obviously NAI has got championship level. I actually wrote a thing earlier this week about just kind of where some of the Iowa high school girls are headed. Obviously we all know about Lily Left going to Iowa, but you know, Janella Vila is headed to Baker, girl from Waverly who's going to Grandview, Hayden Snyder. There's a girl from Cedar Rapids Prairie who fifth place at the state tournament. She's pretty talented. Erica Brockovich is going to McKendree, like the McKendree. So that's kind of cool. Iowa girls, I did doing research there. I found out like Iowa girls have done really well at McKendree, right? Jasmine Bailey, Megan Black, Felicity Taylor before she came over to Iowa. So that's kind of cool. Simpson under Jeff McGinnis is loading up. Wartburg has a women's program. They've, you know, handful of state medalists there and there. So yeah, I know we want D1, but like the product and the there's going to be, so starting next year, 18 colleges in Iowa that are going to have women's wrestling.
Yeah, it's gnarly. Let me see. I've got a list. You know, I keep a list of this stuff on almanac.mattalkonline.com. That is a free thing that I do. It's, you can't really copy and paste it because there's a lot of stuff in there that is proprietary. But the new college teams, I got a whole general list of college teams. So let's see exactly how many teams. Let's see. So we
there's
can
north
have a
of
sort by state.
There's north of 150, right? Like total. Like if we count, you know, JUCO, NAI, NCAA programs.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that. There was and because there's another one coming this week, Newberry College in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Kind of poorly kept secret because they were advertising the job before it's been announced, and that press release is coming. So if I go to my non-public Google Doc, I have a nice little pivot table pulled out. So the women break out as we stand with Newberry pending. We're at 4 Division 1s, 30 Division 2s, 53 Division 3s. So that gives us a total of 89 NCAA schools. We have 44 NAIA schools and then 26 junior colleges, and that includes the California League, the NJCAA, and then the Northwest Athletic Conference, which is the Pacific Northwest junior colleges that sometimes they compete in the NJCAA, but they are actually in a different governing body. So, you know me in semantics, I have to explain this to people. I'm here to educate. So that's where we're at. 157 Newberry when it's announced either today, maybe announced by the end of this show, or Friday. It'll be the 90th NCAA school and 158th program that's either been added or announced.
That's awesome. So that's really cool. That's really, really cool. Women's wrestling, couple of different topics. I just got a list of things we can just kind of go off of. Women's wrestling is on the list of things.
Well, I was gonna link your women's story into the newsletter at matthookonline.com/news, but that one was paywalled. So as every Des Moines Register story I can find that's about wrestling, I'll throw in the newsletter, unless it's got, this one's for subscribers only. And I have an account that I can read them, but I am not a paid subscriber of all the newspapers in this country. I do not have that kind of budget. Even though the Register, as we've seen with Cody and of course his predecessors, that the toughest assignment in wrestling is covering college and high school wrestling in the state of Iowa. That's why there's a bunch of you that do it.
So it's interesting. They made it was an editorial decision this past year. Maybe this is where we can start, just the state of wrestling media. Editorial decision earlier this year to put like 90% of high school wrestling stuff behind paywalls this year. You know, because there's a ton of people that cover Iowa, there's a ton of people that cover Iowa State, you know, so we hope that they come to me for, you know, that sort of expertise. But when it comes to high school wrestling, there's only a handful of us that really cover it in super in depth, and we give it the time of day all year round, especially during the season. But, you know, obviously we're doing some recruiting stuff in the last couple of years. I've written about the duels in Fargo and stuff like that. So vast majority of high school stuff, Des Moines Register editors were like, yeah, we're going to throw it behind the paywall and see who pays for it. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I know they're good. So shout out to the readers.
Yeah, and well, that's one thing where the paywall makes sense for the local readership, because you've got to pay to get the newspaper anyway, typically. So it was like when the media, the Minnesota State High School League up here, didn't allow The Athletic, which is like becoming one of the gold standards for sports journalism across the country, if not the world. They didn't credential Michael Russo for the state high school hockey tournament. And Russo's the wild guy, but Russo knows his hockey. And the excuse was, well, we don't credential paywalled media. How do you get a newspaper? You pay for it. So like the initial paywall was going to the store, getting it delivered. You paid for it. So from the local perspective, that's where your local readership is. Now, I would be interested in it from a national standpoint, but I don't have an issue with the local paywall stuff. Although sometimes when I go back and I want to read something from the shell of the paper I used to work for back home, it's like, well, maybe Yahoo will pick it up in a day or so with, you know, the retreading of news that these other sites tend to do. So, but yeah, that, I mean, shows demand, and, you know, newspapers, you know, for, to pay people like Cody Goodwin, they need to make money. Right. So yeah, I'm for the paywall in many instances.
Yeah, I don't mind it. You know, there's sometimes and I'll fight for, you know, we have like weird benchmarks for, you know, what stays behind the paywall. Mm-hmm. Like if we believe a story will go viral. So like Todd mentioned earlier, Lily Luft, she has a fantastic story just with her brother Logan passing away in a ATV accident and how that kind of inspired her to get into wrestling. You know, there was a story at the Girl State Tournament in February. A lot of us, I think, ended up writing about it, but, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why I fought to keep that in front of the paywall. The story, tremendous. After Lily's brother Logan died, he was a organ donor. And so various levels of muscle tissue and handful of organs went to people who needed it. Well, the young girl that received his heart is this young woman named Ember Henderson from Kentucky. And she was actually in the arena when Lily won her third state title this past season. And so they had been trying to get her there over the last couple of years, but like COVID and, you know, she's got some immunity issues. Obviously she needed a heart, right? So, you know, this year they were, the Luft family was able to make it work. She was in the stands both days. I'm pretty sure they stuck around for state duels. They walked her around the University of Iowa campus. That's where Lily's going to school. You know, cause Coralville, Iowa City right there, really, really cool thing. And so I was kind of like, hey, like one, multiple people are going to be writing the story. Two, you know, one of the, think of the arguments that they made for a story like that is like, oh, it's got a chance to go viral. So let's keep it in front of the paywall, which I don't know, but like, it's, you know, it's been kind of interesting to be looped in a little bit more on some of those like higher up journalism business decisions. Cause honestly, it's better informed the way that I've kind of looked at like wrestling media as a whole. You know, I think wrestling media is probably there's a lot more content than there is like actual old school traditional journalism. So, you know, just like I'm a storyteller. Andy Hamilton's a storyteller. You're a storyteller, but you also do a lot of digital stuff. There's just it's would that be a fair assessment, you think? Like there's more content than like actual old school traditional journalism? But I don't know. Like there's two different trains of thought there.
The journalism, we're, you know, I've brought this point up a lot. We're in a situation where we grew up, you know, some of us started in the sport later than others. Like I didn't start into wrestling till I was, didn't see a match till I was 15, didn't start actually step on the mat and put the shoes on till I was 16. Matter of fact, I still have my gently used high school headgear hanging over here right now, like gently used, like didn't even have decals and mat tape and mat burn on it because, you know, it was gently used. But, you know, you get into wrestling, you end up, you have these relationships. And, you know, the interest I had in journalism and broadcasting was before I even got into wrestling. So I always wanted to be a sports broadcaster. Wrestling got in the way and kind of took me that way. We get into situations where as the relationships get built over the years, you know, we cover our friends, which is becomes, you know, it's that ethical conundrum. Like you tell stories about wrestling. Which Brewer brother was it that that you wrestled at the state tournament, or Bricker Dixon and the Mangos? Like you've had relationships with those guys long before you were a journalist, and then now you're in their world again. And it's like, you know, there's that relationship there. And then sometimes it's, you know, I hate to use the term access journalism in a negative connotation because it's usually viewed negatively. It's like, well, we have access because, you know, people want something from us and we can get good information from us. But there's also that line, well, you know, Gary Abbott, for example, was not friends with any of the athletes that were active senior level athletes at USA Wrestling. He becomes friends with them socially after their careers are done. So, you know, Gary doesn't have that line. That's something that I asked. I remember going to a birthday party right when I got hired. I'm like, hey, what's the angle here? And he goes, well, and he told me, like, I don't hang out with the athletes while they're still athletes. The difference is like a post-social party, like at Worlds or something like that. But there's that line we have to look at. So journalism in its barest form, like, I don't think we have a lot of it because, again, the relationships we have gives us access, but it also makes us wonder, like, okay, is this going to hurt the sport if I come out with this expose on something that's crazy? Or is this, or do you glance over this? Or is it, you know, you almost second guess almost everything you do in a lot of ways. Like, you know, I don't think it's, I'm going to jeopardize my relationship. I'm more worried about the personal relationship than the access. So I think we have to balance those things. But from a journalistic aspect of it, I think covering high school sports like the Register and the Gazette and the other papers in the state that do it so well, I think that's where your pure wrestling journalism is at more the localized level. When you get nationally, I mean, Willie knows people, I know people, you know people, Earl know people, the guys in Austin know people. Like, it's going to be hard to write something down the line on anything with that journalistic, you know, background. So I think we have it. The content, you know, I guess that's kind of been an out for people. It's like, I'm a content creator, or this is content creation. Okay, it is. You know, where's the ethics in it? And, you know, I think there's, you know, let's look at Justin Bash's show, for example. People like, you know, he puts out content, he puts out graphics, you know, he has guests on his show. It's got a journalistic angle to it, but, you know, he makes no bones about it. He's a Penn State fan and he has a heavy slant there. So people need to understand what they're looking at. And, you know, my show, I try to be as balanced as I can, but at the same point, when I'm hired by Virginia Tech to do their show, when I'm hired to produce the NC State show, you know, other clients, I've had Maryland, I've had Buena Vista, I've had Little Rock. So it's a little different when you're a hired gun in situations and then you're trying to be unbiased in another. So there really is a big blur around, you know, what is journalism these days. I don't think it's just in wrestling, but I think us, we have a lot less in terms of, you know, you can't just lean on ESPN to cover a sport unbiased because it doesn't happen. So it's a lot of people that are self-starters that have created their own aspects, created their own avenues. And then we have the very fortunate people like yourself who actually get paid to cover wrestling by a company that's not dependent on how many subscribers do I have for my, you know, my Rockfin channel or my Patreon or, you know, internet premium service. I remember when I was at the NWCA, I always wanted to have as many premium subscribers that paid my salary. That was called job security, you know, 15 years ago. So that could be a lengthy discussion on its own too, but there's a lot of blurred edges to these lines that we have.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, I think sometimes even I personally blurred that line just because, you know, when you cover high school wrestling, I guess for as long as I have, like you really get to know these kids and these families. Like I've covered brothers and sisters, you know, because a lot of these kids will stay in state. Like I get to see a lot of them the full length of their career from the time they were freshmen in high school through, you know, their college years now, which is really, really cool. But it's also like, you know, how do I tread that line? I mean, I could probably tread it better. Like I'll be real. You know, I end up rooting for kids. I end up rooting for stories. You know, I don't know that I necessarily root for Iowa State or UNI. Like, is my job easier when those teams win or when interesting stories unfold with them? Yes. You know, but I don't know. The high school avenue of things has gotten me so like super invested into like the people. You know, not so much like the colors or the teams, but like the people. And it's made it really fun because, you know, you're able to like build those relationships and really kind of show, you know, the reputation is that like, look, like, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm going to hold power to account. I'm going to dig and, you know, breaking news and this, that, and the next. And if something doesn't smell right, like I'm going to figure out what's going on, you know, but at the same time, it's like, there's, you know, by doing that, but also, you know, forming relationships with these kids where, you know, here's an example. There's a lot of kids that they want to, you know, content creation, branding, self-branding are kind of, you know, two things that are tangentially related or adjacent to one another. A lot of these kids want to announce like their college commitments. And a lot of times I'm so, you know, I know what's going on in their lives and what's going on in their recruiting process that, you know, I'll know where they're committing before they announce it, but they want me to hold the story so that they can be the ones to announce it. You know, other, you know, people higher up might look at that and be like, well, what, like, why don't you just break it? And it's like, well, it's kind of, you know, I want the kids to have their moments. Right. But I also want to be the first one with the story. And so it's usually, you know, like there's a small process there, but like, as soon as they announce it, boom, we drop our story and everybody wins. You know, I don't know that that's one small example. I don't know that I would have an opportunity to do things like that if I wasn't so, you know, invested with these kids and have so much FaceTime with these kids. And, you know, it's not just, oh, it's like, oh, it's the dude from the paper. It's like, no, it's Cody from the Register. Like it's, you know, like there is that dynamic to it, which is, that's been really fun. But also like, if I wasn't covering high school wrestling for as long as I have, would I have built that? Like, would that have been a thing that would have been possible? I don't know. Like that's an interesting, I blur that line a lot, I think.
Well, and technology's made that different too. You talk about the signings because, you know, let's roll it back 2005 when I took over at Intermat. I'm coming from Virginia, running a site out of my dorm room and out of that place in Norfolk for 7 years. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, how do I compile the signings? It was a lot of searching. It was a lot of, you know, relationships. You know, I remember when Alex Meade committed to Oklahoma State and there was a couple schools battling. And I remember there was a Big Ten staff calling me all the time going, hey, have you heard anything yet? Because the coaches are not supposed to tell you a verbal commitment. And now every single coach has their way of telling you a verbal commitment without actually telling you their verbal commitment. But before social media, you know, it's like actually early social media, I got commitment. Zach Kemmerer committed to Penn to me via a MySpace message. Alex Meade's dad called me. I'm at the bar on a Friday. And here I am thinking, all right, I just posted a good story on the front page of Intermat. And back then the news cycle was a thing. I'm not going to, you know, the front page of the website was a thing. So I was like, all right, I got a nice story I just put up. Al Meade calls me. He goes, JB, I got it for you. And I'm like, why don't we just wait till Monday? And I'm sitting there thinking, no, this is going to end. So I was worried about beating the message boards for some of these things. Cause if the board could beat me, what did they need to sign up for the premium service for? So I'd have the full, you know, I was like, all right. And then I went back, got my laptop. The Wi-Fi wasn't even at the bar. I think I went to another bar that had Wi-Fi. updated the commitment, had the story on the front page, and basically went suck it on the to the those that like to try to beat me on the message boards. But you know, that was the day. I mean, the Cejudo documentary that we're going to talk about, I remember calling Henry's cell phone. He was on a trip to Chattanooga. Yes, Henry did take recruiting trips. He was on a trip to Chattanooga. And I remember talking to Henry briefly before we, you know, got cut off, and he was like trying to figure out where the trips were. Kirk White, Kirk Smith. Kirk White was the boy, the other boys. Well, Kirk Smith, and I'm looking at the football schedule, and I'm like, okay, he's on an Oklahoma State trip. They're taking on Florida Atlantic that weekend. He's going to be at Boise State, and they take on Washington. And this is when Boise State was rolling with the football thing. And I'm like, Boise State has a good football weekend. That's going to be heavy. You know, I'm looking at those intangibles, but regarding the technology, Thomas Scotton from Jersey, he commits to North Carolina, says, hey, we're going to go to Carolina. I'd like to wait till Monday or wait till Thursday. Well, then another paper gets it. I still waited until the dad had requested it, and then I put it on the front. So there's situations too where I'd say, hey, wait until this day and I'll put it out because I've got this kid's committing. I want to make sure you get your top billing. And it was one of those things where it was a balancing act of the content because they didn't just go on Twitter and say, I'm going here. Sometimes I'd like to get a quote or, you know, here are their top five. I mean, I had the recruiting ticker, the stuff that, you know, here we are 18 years ago, we were doing this before social media, and it was a lot more phone calls and emails. And I remember Mark Manning getting so mad at me for him not getting a commitment from Jesse Strawn, calls me up on my cell phone because Jesse Strawn was from Holton, Kansas, committed to Old Dominion. And Manning calls me and goes, where did you get that? It's like the kid called me. He goes, no, Martin called you. You know, I can't do that. That's illegal. I'm like, no, Jesse called me. He's like, how did you get your number? It's on my office number. Well, how did you get your office number? It's on the website. But something's not right here. I've got a home visit. I mean, it was just like the recruiting. I mean, now it's like, who knows what the heck's going on with the portal and the tampering allegations. I mean, college hockey coaches got into a shoving contest down at their convention last week about the portal and transfers and tampering and such. So just that balance of how the kids announce it. And that's one thing now. It's like, I think it's now the kids' moment to put it out there. And if you've got that relationship to get the full story on it, I think that's the added, oh, here's why, here's quotes. To me, that's valuable, more valuable as a reader than the graphic. Okay. You know, but I've seen kids putting out, here's my top six. Well, we used to do that, but we had to do a lot more legwork to get it. It wasn't just the kids saying, here's my top 10 schools. Now it's like, okay, hey, yeah, what schools are you looking at? Okay, what visit dates do you have? And now with no limits on visits coming up, it's going to be like, if you were tracking this today like we used to, my goodness. So a little bit is the weight off your chest and trying to break your commitment recruit, that's gone. You know, it's like you used to have to try to just beat the message boards on themat.com or other rogue message boards that may have existed. I remember one in Ohio that loved to give me shit. Billy Tickets Forum, man, they were all over me for that stuff, including Meade. That was one of them where he'd committed, he'd committed to Ohio State. Well, Alex and his dad never called me about that. And, you know, oh, kid changed his mind. So it was like, well, the kid never told me anything other than Oklahoma State or the dad. So sadly, Alex is no longer with us, but that was, I just remember that one being one of the tracking down the recruiting it the old journalistic way. You know, you got the relationship, they call you, you wait to break it. When's the news cycle going to come? So news cycles don't exist with commitments anymore. So my pain and suffering is all yours these days, Cody.
Sometimes I'd like to think that I probably stay on top of like 80, 85, maybe even 90%. Sometimes like there's sometimes where like, I just have an early night and I need to go to sleep for whatever reason. And I wake up the next morning and it's like, oh, a kid posted a commitment at like 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. And it's like, well, guess that's what I'm doing first thing in the morning.
Thankfully, I don't have to cover high school wrestling as much anymore. Like to me, a lot of these kids show up on the radar when they get to Fargo. It's like, okay, that's when I'm going to start. Or they're making some world teams or something. I'm like, all right, now I can start paying attention. And I'm usually used to be the guy like, oh yeah, that kid's going to commit to here or that kid's going here. And now I'm like, where's that kid going? And I've got like the internet list up of commitments. But okay, because I used to have that stuff. That was in all of my releases, like in Fargo. I'd always have the list of commitments. And I always thought it was cool when the kids would wear the college shirt because they would wrestle after their senior year. They'd go out like James Nicholson from Des Moines. We went to Old Dominion and, you know, he's in the finals against Zach Sanders wearing an Old Dominion wrestling shirt. I thought that type of moment was cool, not just for, you know, ye old alma mater, but at the same point, like, the kids get to showcase their signing and stuff. And I do wish that we did more of a signing day kind of thing with the suggestion. I mean, I think it was Johnny Sebastian, I thought, did a really, really good job of holding his commitment to the spring and made it, think, got a lot of headlines out of it versus just the social juice he got once. If you're not a viral athlete, typically, you're not going to get a lot of that social juice that you might think you do. Whereas the newspapers still hold some clout, like especially in places like New Jersey, where just like Iowa, they cover high school wrestling very well. So you hold your commitment, you're last on the board, you're going to get a lot of headlines. Or you say, I'm going to announce it here, you're actually going to get, you know, old school journalistic coverage as well as the social juice. So I still think there's, I wish we would wait more. That's why I wish there were more senior fall commitments than there were, you know, sophomore of, you know, September of my sophomore year. I'm going to commit. I'm done for the next 3 years. You know, that's, I long for those days. Cody Gardner, that early commitment, his junior year to Virginia Tech, in that old era. And again, Cody's also no longer with us, but I remember that just changed everything. And from then on out, it's been more and more early commitments. Now kids committing ninth grade and eighth grade. And of course, portal commitments, what do they mean these days, as we've learned with what's also been in the news lately?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shoot, maybe that's the, we'll come back to a few media musings that you and I can hash back and forth. But the first topic, when we were kind of like, you know, hey, what should we talk about today? The literally the one that's top of mind is the one that happened earlier this week. Cody Chittum.
With some journalism on your end there too. You know, you got quotes, you got comments.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was, we'll get into that. Short version, Cody Chittum, one-time Iowa commitment, now officially signed with
Iowa State.
One-time
Minnesota commitment.
Yeah, what, three commitments in the span of like 18 months or something like that? I don't know the exact year math, but was committed to Minnesota, flipped to Iowa last summer, have spent the last year in Iowa City living, training with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, competing with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, and now multiple variables in play. He decides to flip and quickly signs with Iowa State. And so this is big because Cody Chittum's really good. You know, I think by UWW, the rankings point system that they have in place right now, like he's top 15 in the world at 70 kilos. As a 19-year-old, just recent high school grad, I suppose. I know this was kind of a gap year for him or a gray shirt year, you know, but he's junior national champ. He's won Super 32, junior Pan Am gold. Like this kid's good. Like walk into the lineup next season and immediate All-American slash perhaps national title threat good. And
24th. Yeah, say hold on. Yeah, 24th is technically where he was at after Pan Am's.
Okay,
I got the non-published. That's at 70. So
okay, yeah. So he's good. He's really, really good. And what makes this really interesting on a number of different levels is because he's going from Iowa to Iowa State. And I think what also really makes this interesting is the why he's leaving Iowa City. Basically,
maybe he's an engineering guy. My next door neighbor, she's going to Iowa State to major in engineering. Just got the grad party email, actual mail, not an email, grad party in the letter in the mail. So maybe it's an engineering thing. Who knows?
It could be. You know, Cody's a really good kid. That could be like a bonus thing on it. No, the big reason he told me, like straight up, got to talk to him on the phone before the announcement came down on Tuesday. The Ferrari family, you know, Iowa's actively recruit. I mean, they have a commitment right now from Anthony Ferrari, who's the middle. They're actively recruiting Angelo, who's the youngest. I am of the belief that AJ, as long as he sorts his off the mat issues out in the courtroom, which I believe his next hearing is in September, believe he will probably follow Anthony to Iowa City. Anthony hasn't signed yet, but he's committed. And Cody Chittum didn't like that. I learned later after we had published our story that the Ferrari family and Cody Chittum were at Blair at the same time, that prep school powerhouse. Cody didn't dive into details. It's weird, side note, weird to be talking about a kid named Cody when my name is also Cody and referencing him in like second and third person or whatever.
Do we want to use Chittum's full name, which is Lucas Dakota Chittum, as on his UWW license. So,
I feel like everybody just knows him as Cody Chittum. So I'm just,
yeah, it's like, you know, Cody Howard, Dakota Howard, Virginia Tech, same guy. When did Cody become short for Dakota? Perhaps when everybody started naming their kids Dakota.
I grew up never having a nickname. Like I was Cody. Like that's what it was.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to get into the nickname discussion here. So
continue. That's funny.
We can glance over that one.
No, when I got Cody Chittum on the phone before his announcement came out, basically told me, he didn't dive into specific details, but he basically told me that whatever happened at Blair when they were there at the same time was enough for him to be like, yeah, I'm not going to be here. I don't want to stay here. I don't want to be teammates with them. And so he just up and left, and he had the freedom to do that because, you know, in the midst of his grayshirt year, he had never officially signed with Iowa. So he had that mobility. You know, hindsight's 2020, but pretty smart move on him and his family.
So you're saying he never signed a letter of intent.
Never signed a letter of intent with Iowa, even though he was living in Iowa City. He was very much training with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club. He had kind of embedded himself with Iowa's current crop of true freshmen, as well as, you know, he's really good friends with Gabe Arnold. They're both from, Chittum's from Tennessee. Gabe's originally from Georgia. You know, became really good friends with Ben Keeter, lives right there in Iowa City. Ryder Block drives down from Waverly all the time to go practices with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club. You know, really embedded himself in that, you know, in the program and with the incoming kids. And, you know, he was very much probably going to be a superstar for Iowa, but because of the Ferrari situation, he says nope. And, you know, now he's a plug and play potential superstar for Iowa State. This is just really interesting.
I have not seen this before, to be quite honest with you. Now, I mean, having been around power programs at the high school level, you know, and then watching recruiting situations unfold in college the last 20 some years, and even looking at my experience in college, we had guys on the team that hated each other. I have never seen it like this before. And I mean, it's just the superstar athletes that are at it. And, you know, sometimes you know that you hear coaches be like, oh, I'm going to go after this kid. I'm not going to go him. That, you know, they know it. I've seen coaches avoid one athlete over another because they're putting something together. And some of that, I don't know how much, you know, the parents are, you know, doing the recruiting for their own kids, or the kids are taking the visits and making the decisions themselves. I think here in this situation, it's been pretty clear that, that Chittum's dad has a lot to do with movement, whether, you know, leaving Tennessee to go to Blair and then, you know, sitting out, things of that nature. But I don't know the family. I can't speak for any personal relationship with either of them. I've had limited interactions with the Ferraris, mostly AJ, when I'm seeing, you know, sign lines of autographs for kids on the road. So it's like the personal interactions I've had with both of these families is very minimal. So I can't give you any perspective there. But it's just, it seems very weird that I have not seen this aired so public. I guess maybe that's where we're at. To go back to our media discussion, we have these discussions that used to be behind closed doors, that used to be coaches arguing within their staffs on what to do. Now they're out in the open. Like, yeah, I don't like this guy. I'm leaving because of him. Never have I seen this before. Now, granted, I don't pay attention to other sports as close, but I have started to see some of this with college hockey, because there's, you know, they go from the high school to the juniors. And when they're playing at the junior level, you get teammates that aren't from your area. And there's like, yeah, I don't like that guy. I'm not going to Merrimack because I play with this guy in Dubuque and he's signed there. So I'm going to go to Michigan Tech. I mean, I've seen a lot of this in just the year. Like, oh, it's a lot. Maybe it's just because the society we're getting into is there's a lot more of that openness on, you know, I'm going to speak my mind. And it's just something that I'm looking back now going, I have not seen this before. And maybe it's been there and I'm just not seen it so publicly aired. It's different.
I've seen it in other sports. You mentioned with like hockey, like, you know, basketball, I hear rumors and murmurs, you know, football, not as much, but I'm, you know, with 85 scholarship athletes and rosters that expand into the triple digits, like no doubt that that's probably a thing that happens. But yeah, this is, and you know, it's probably different because it's right here in front of my face. You know, two of the three D1 programs that I cover are involved. Yeah. First time I've seen it just out there in the open. And, you know, again, Cody didn't dive into details, but just very upfront, like, yeah, like I don't want to be there if they're going to be there. And
now, what about the discussion, you know, because every time somebody jumps ship now, everybody's thinking that there's a bag. Everybody thinks that this is all NIL based. This is all, no, he got offered more money. And sometimes, what is it? Occam's razor is the most simple explanation is usually, you know, I think it's something like that. This case, this seems to be a logical situation. You know, of course, if you know, you read message boards, which have been really fun to read the last 24 hours, You know, there's all sorts of things get thrown out by all sorts of fan base. And that's just college sports in general, especially with the portal. But I don't see a whole lot of NIL impact in this like the other transfers we've seen from major program to major program the last couple weeks. So this one doesn't seem to have that that sticking point to it as well.
No, I think the one thing that I really did notice, and this is, you know, any fan base that's just trying to come to grips with the fact that they lost a potential superstar, is just, you know, they go through the stages of grief, you know, like they're, you know, denial, like, no, like there's no way, blah, blah, blah. Like, and then they start making up excuses about how, you know, because Anthony Ferrari's roughly the same weight as Chittum. So like, oh, he didn't want competition. He wouldn't do this, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, like he, like there's whatever happened when they were at Blair. Again, I don't know the specific details.
Clearly, it was not resolved.
Yeah, and it was bad enough that all these years later, Cody Chittum and his family are like, if they're here, we're gone. End of story. Like, it's, I don't know what happened. I don't know if any of us will ever know what happened. I'm sure some people do. But whatever it was bad enough. And I told Cody this too. I'm like, dude, it's kind of a bummer that what's a bummer about this is that the circumstances under which you're leaving, it's like, that's what's forced you to leave. Like, kids move, kids transfer, whatever, like that happens. But like the circumstances that made him leave here is what I think is maybe the biggest bummer of this all. At the same time, like from my perspective, like it's cool that he's at another in-state school, like at Iowa, because that means I get to watch him from up close and he's really fun to watch, man.
Storyline.
Dude, Cy-Hawk Duel is going to be juicy this year, man. Like, it's going to be crazy because
you get a storyline that you don't even have to. You don't even have to put any embellishment on any of this. This is just. You know, where's that popcorn gif, whatever? I don't care what you call it. It's just, I'm gonna be, you know, give me Kenny Powers with the chair. Yeah,
right. Like, it's just teed like up.
I said,
right
before
there.
We started, I may have to go down to Carver this year for that one because it's been years.
It's supposed to be in Ames this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have to go down there. Oh, Ames is a little shorter trip, so I have to go down to Hilton for that. So,
and so here's the here's what makes it even more fun. Like, not only like because I was doing, you know, what does Cy-Hawk look like now that Chittum's at Iowa State, right? Gonna be a heated, intense duel. It may come down to three or four different weights that ultimately two or three different weights that decide it. But on top of that, had a conversation with Rock Harrison, ACC Network, ACC Wrestling Friday Night Duels. Plus, he does a lot of stuff for ESPN as well. Because it's at Hilton, it's Big 12, so Big 10 can't touch it. Rock is angling to try and get that duel on ESPNU, or not ESPNU, ESPN2. And so in my head, I'm like, oh, Sean Kenny, Rock Harrison, get Kyvan Gadsden.
Sean's
like
right Matt down the road in Perry. So, I mean, it's a, you know, talk about saving on the expenses there. It's not like we're flying him to, where were we just at? Zagreb, you know?
Yeah.
Sean can do this one in his sleep.
Yeah. So like ESPN2, Cy-Hawk, you know, way too early predictions suggest that it's going to be a really heated duel. Then you add in this Cody Chittum dynamic. You know, Tom Brands has never lost to Iowa State. Could this be the year? How much of a difference if Chittum does start at 57? Like, how much of a difference does that make? Plus on the worldwide leader, like that's, yeah, yeah.
Can we put
at a sold out Hilton Coliseum
behind the broadcast booth again? That would be another interesting thing.
They might, like, I mean, shoot, why not bring him in as like a practice?
See, now
or
I'm
like
now
that.
I'm stoking the fire a little bit. No,
there we go.
That's one I'm going to have to look at on the schedule. If there's no conflict, I mean, that's, I've never been to a Cy-Hawk duel. So, and I,
oh, you know, dude, it's been awesome the last few years.
5 hours. Well, you know, in the relationship, you know, I've had with Kevin Dresser goes back since I was in high school. So it's one of those things where it's, you know, I always wave to the stadium when I drive by Ames, just mainly because one of my good friends is a Cyclone alum. So I've, you know, made the drive past Ames numerous times on my way to Carver or on my way to Des Moines or on my way point south, but not too many stops in Ames. So hopefully schedule works out for that one, because otherwise it'll be one of those things where I'm in a frozen penalty box with my phone up going, nah! So who knows?
It'll be awesome. It'll be
schedules
awesome.
Out. Maybe you know, Hilton can get back on the attendance boom that they've had for pretty good attendance, including their Beauty and the Beast this year. But yeah, they can get Iowa State. Iowa's, of course, always going to be number one in the attendance situation, but Iowa State, but third this year, I think. So that'll be another one to fill it in next year.
They've done a lot better, man. Like, just in terms of just building the like, obviously it starts with winning, and Iowa State has kind of shown that, like, as if the team and the program is winning, the fans will show up. And so I think this could be a really fun year attendance wise for Iowa State, because I'm trying to think, they had Oklahoma State at home last year, but like, they should get Mizzou at Hilton. Dresser's done really, really well scheduling, you know, a Pac-12 opponent, ACC opponent. They brought in Illinois for Beauty and the Beast, which was, you know, highly successful. They're going to have Iowa this year. You know, this should also be the year that UNI comes to Ames. You know, they've had to go to Cedar Falls the last couple of years, and they've
those
done really
have been fun. Jeez.
Yeah, right. So now you get that in front of the Ames crowd. I'm not saying that they could usurp Iowa or Penn State for 1 and 2, but like, they could strengthen their stranglehold on third, Iowa State, in the attendance numbers.
2 is attainable because Penn State doesn't throw all their events at the Bryce Jordan Center. So, I mean, they did 2 this year, which means they were almost creeping over that 10,000. I mean, they're, I think, 9,000 and change, because you only get 66 and change at Rec Hall. So, number 2 is there for the taking should some of these schools, want to, you know, get more people in. You know, Iowa's going to be number 1. That's, you know, 16 years in a row. So that, I don't see that changing anytime soon, unless Penn State wants to put everything at the Bryce Jordan Center, which Kale's pretty much said he doesn't want to do.
Speaking of attendance, you put together the list for attendance this year for D1 wrestling home attendance. We've touched on it already. Iowa was the leader this year, Penn State second, Iowa State third. How'd you feel about putting that together this year? Just either the process or the final results? Like, what were your kind of larger takeaways behind that? We'll put a link in the show notes so people can go check out the numbers. I know I wrote a story on Iowa State and UNI being in the top 20, but what was that like for you this year? What'd you think?
It's never fun, because it's a lot of pile. I mean, I already pile through the box scores nightly anyway, because one of the byproducts of me coordinating the Division I coaches poll is I put all the links together and I put a little spreadsheet together, and I create a college standings page that really very few people look at, because, again, I wish the dual meet standings meant more. But one of the byproducts is, okay, I'm going to track down the attendance. Now, Danny Deal from Lehigh University's wrestling newsletter, he's been doing that for whatever. He started tracking it in, I think, 2002. I had helped him through my era at Intermat, and then, you know, periodically I'd help him track down stuff. And then Alex Steen took it over for a year when he was at the Open Mat. And then when he left the Open Mat, it pretty much just fell in my lap. So I've been fully handling it myself for the last 5 or 6 years. And it's part of that relationship I have with what's now known as College Sports Communicators. It used to be known as COSIDA, the College Sports Information Directors of America. So in basketball box scores and football box scores, they have this attendance box. So you know the attendance for every sport, team sport, there is in the NCAA for the most part. There are some, you know, I guess tennis is technically a team sport. They don't do attendance. But so when we look at wrestling, some schools put it in there, some schools don't. I've been trying to get track wrestling to put an attendance bit in their box scores for years. But if it's not in the box score and there's a home duel, I will email the SID pretty much immediately if I get it. And then sometimes by the end of the year, either if the school doesn't put it into their box score or the story themselves, they'll just email me. I know the guy at Hofstra would send out the release in like 2 minutes after it gets released, because attendance was this. So I'm trying to train them to get it to do that. But then again, the changeover in sports information is 30% a year. So you got to train another third of them every year, and it's not the same third. You know, Iowa was blessed to have Chris Brewer for so long. Before that, you know, Tracy Wagner, great job. But Minnesota has changeover like every 2 years. So you get somebody good and then they leave. And it's like, Brian Reinhardt at NC State was there for like 9 or 10 years. It's like, we got him trained and he became one of the best, and then he's out of the business. Like, So the frustrating thing is, one, I don't want to piss these people off. Most of the time they're a grad assistant, or sometimes they're new to wrestling. And like, who's this wrestling guy that's incessantly badgering me about attendance? I want to be helpful. So I always send him the list of, you know, hey, here's some stuff from the Media Association. Some, in case you're not covering wrestling for the first time, in case you're covering it for the first time, feel free to reach out. Here's a list of terms to use. Here's a list of terms not to use. Of course, you know what number one on that list. and then, you know, throughout the years, you build that rapport with them, or they're asking you questions. But Campbell started tracking attendance this year, because I was like, hey, you need to charge and you need to track attendance. I have, you know, directly App State sold season tickets, finally got him to track attendance. So what's disappointing is Stanford. And Rob Cole's aware of this, and I showed him these numbers. And like, Stanford is a Power 5 school that does not track attendance. Navy only tracks attendance when it's at a certain venue. Some schools, VMI, their guy, hand counted. Now, I'd say he probably took a little bit of liberties because the numbers were always like rounded. But hey, give these schools credit for actually trying. So now we have 8 schools did not provide attendance figures this year. It would have been 9, but Lindenwood in their transitional year didn't have any home duels. So, you know, I'm sure they would have provided something if had they had a home duel. Their transition, they had no natural rivals right now. So, but it, you know, every bit counts, because if you say, oh, well, 500 is nothing. Well, 500 is a pretty full church, pretty big class for college, right? So, tracking them down, you know, Iowa's going to put it out there. Penn State's Pat Don guy puts the sellout streak, or how many, you know, it's a thing for some of these schools. Rutgers makes a big point of the attendance in the first graph. Ohio State does a really good job. So I'm starting to see at least the Power 5 schools pay more attention to the attendance. And then we're seeing schools tout their records on social media. Like Virginia Tech had almost 6,000 against NC State, which part of that too is the Friday night duels have created that rivalry. And it's like, when both teams were my clients, it's like, I hate it when mom and dad fight. But so you had Virginia Tech and NC State bickering, and that gets people, and people want to come out to an event when there's a lot of people. So many people, hey, what's that? Let's go. So one of the takeaways too is I'm seeing a lot more duels. Let's see, how many duels do we have over 1,000 people? I had 140 duels with over 1,000 people.
That's now awesome.
Yes, I think that is awesome. We also have to realize too that there's only been, I think, 107 or 108 duels in wrestling history that have had over 10,000 fans. So for the last, what, how many duels we have in Iowa, you know, that increment, that goes up by 8 or 9 every year, depending on how many home duels the Hawkeyes have. So we know that Bryce Jordan Center had 2, 59.98 was tied the indoor record. Of course, now we're getting to teams using semantics, which, you know, I love to do, indoor record, because the record is not going to be broken right now. At 42287
or something like that.
Something like that, yeah, at Kinnick. So until we want to supplant what Nebraska volleyball is going to be doing. But
dude, that's awesome.
82,000 for women's volleyball. I brought that up on another show. Well, that hasn't been released yet, but that's something that's going to need to happen. So yeah, 82,000 for volleyball. But you know, seeing those thousands, but you know, we have 1,000's nothing to sneeze at. And then we see all the, we needed 1,200 times a year. It was up, I think it was at 170 before COVID. And then we're starting to get that climb back up. But we're seeing the Oregon State start to promote like a big duel. And Cal Poly, I think that was one where they were at 750 last year. Their average 1,200 and change this year. They finally broke 1,000 average. I'm looking at Oregon State had a 6,700 and then a 1,600 and a 1,300, but their other three duels, 9-10, 8-13, 9-87. Okay, if you're not a Hawkeye fan, take Carver out of the equation. It's kind of hard if you've been going to Carver for years and you see big crowds. Well, not every place is like Carver. I mean, a great crowd is what Penn State has at Rec Hall. That would be a phenomenal crowd. College hockey only has 2 or 3 buildings that have over 10,000. North Dakota, Minnesota, and I think there may be one more out east that has it. But your average college hockey arena now, you're looking, they're building a 5,000 seat arena. St. Cloud State, we draw about 4,000 and change. I think we can get 6 in that building, and had over 6,000 for the Minnesota game. So, you know, indoor, you know, let's look at the crowds. Carver is the outlier when it comes to college sports in this situation. So I love the fact that we're getting 140. We're getting a lot more teams are averaging 1,000. Missouri had over 1,000 for three of their 4 events, 782 for the other. Of course, the Beauty and the Beast comes in. That was 4 of the big events. So, you know, from a spectator standpoint on TV, Beauty and the Beast are kind of hard to watch with the split screen. But when you're in the building, I've been at one in Ames. It was pretty cool. It's like you've always got something to do. But I'm just more excited that this is the most schools we've ever had actually give me attendance numbers. So I remember the first year, and these are all on the website, matttalkonline.com, the almanacs.matttalkonline.com, going back to 2002. And there are years that Hawkeyes were not drawing 14 and change. There's some years that I think that the top team didn't even break 10,000. So we're seeing that's, again, that's also the point. The growth is in the dual meet. You know, NCAA attendance is going to be sold out no matter where it's going to be, save the domes if we ever go back to there again. But, you know, that doesn't show growth in the sport. To me, growth in the sport from a fan situation is who's showing up in TV ratings. So more people show up, more people will show up, more people will watch. So it's all built on that. So, I mean, even Franklin and Marshall was averaging 275, and their gym is tiny. So,
no, yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. That's it was exciting to see the numbers, just the fact that, you know, like you said, all the way down to number 25, Utah Valley, averaging 1,000 people per home duel. You know, it's Cal Poly's on there, Oklahoma, even with all their struggles on there, South Dakota State, awesome to see that. Arizona State, I know they've been pretty
South
good
Dakota
for the last
State
few years.
Duels are fun. I went out there when the Hawks wrestled them a couple of years ago and Bono was still there, and it was like, you go into Brookings and it was just like Frost Arena, man. It's just like, it was dark. You get the mat lamp and you darken out. You don't see, it's South Dakota State's a cool place to watch a duel meet. That's for sure.
That's all. Yeah. Well, and shoot, they're clearly investing in the sport there. They're about to open a brand new, you know, standalone wrestling facility down there. So that's,
I want to get to Rutgers for a duel. Cause I was there. Cause Jersey wrestling fans, oh my goodness, they're a treat.
Dude, Big Ten's there in 2020, like right before COVID shut everything down. That was a ton of fun.
Garden State Grapple, not this past year, but the year before when I think Rutgers was wrestling Carolina, and I think one of the Carolina kids got hurt and didn't wrestle. And just some of those Rutgers fans don't care if they're in mixed company or there's kids around. It is just, it's, you know, I think, you know, Tobacco Road Mother Trucker was the edited version of what I heard one Rutgers fan say. And I'm like, you know what? I need to get out there for a duel meet against like Iowa or something. And just, I just want to sit back and be like, hit record and be like, I'm going to hear some new things. Oh man. But yeah. So, you know, and you get in a full building, it's fun. People will make it a comeback. We'll come back, which is another point about the schedule. Why you have a duel in November and then not again until February, you don't get any of that return. So, you know, the Friday night duels, you have a compact schedule of a season for television, and you get packed houses on Fridays. That's what grows the sport. It's getting people into the buildings. It's not necessarily how many tickets we sell at the Nationals, because those are the people that have the money to spend a grand on a weekend. Give me the 10 to 15 year old kids that are seeing wrestling for the first time and then are begging their parents to go back again and again because they had a good time. Those are people who become the wrestling fans, whether they end up wrestling or not. So we need to keep, you know, our gray. I'm starting to get some grays in here. So I'm going to be the gray hair guy at these events. And so you got to replace the gray hairs. That's not a shot on our older fan base, but yeah, we got to replace you guys. Cause there's been a generation of people that got used to it, and who's going to fill them back in because, you know, our attention spans are shorter. I mean, you know, things of that nature. That's a whole nother tangent as well.
I like that. Another thing, NWMA recently released, say that five times fast. Couple of awards, the Jay Hammond Award from the NWMA. That's pretty exciting, right? It's the biggest honor that the National Wrestling Media Association, that's NWMA, for those who don't know, hands out, and you gave it to a couple of, I mean, from my perspective, these guys are a couple of legends, right? Like John Hoke from Amateur Wrestling News, and then Andy Hamilton, Flow Wrestling / Flow Sports, formerly of Track Wrestling and the Des Moines Register and the Iowa City Press Citizen.
You want to go back to the Daily Iowan while you're at it?
All the way back to the Daily Iowan. Yeah, like that's awesome.
So the Media Association, Jay Hammond was our past president, and okay, he passed away several years ago. But what Jay did, and why we named it after Jay, and I've been the president since when Jay stepped down. I assumed the role. I've been president, I guess, almost eight to 10 years. Has to be at least 10, because I've been in this house 10 years, and I had the P.O. box in Colorado Springs. That's how long it's been. And Jay came in and basically kind of gave us back a web presence. He printed out our the earliest membership card that we had to carry around. And we went from 17 on the membership to Jay bumped us up more. And Jay's relevance when he was working the notes at the NCAAs is he had his database, the wrestling stats database. And whenever there was a question or a stat, he was there ready for it. And he was our go-to on all things history, which I get all of that stuff now. But you know, Jay kind of re-engaged and reinvigorated the Media Association, which was founded in 1989. Norm Palovsek, Rob Sherrill, Gary Abbott were the three founders of the National Wrestling Media Association. So when Jay came in, I want to say 2004-ish, and when WrestlingStats.com launched, this was like Jay Hammond, you know, he's been one of the historians for the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and part of the history of collegiate wrestling with the book, which I contributed to back in 2003, 2004. You know, Jay's, as a journalist, as a media guy, that wasn't his thing. But what Jay did was provided a different look on the association. It's like, hey, let's just do this with just some simple things that we didn't know we had the resources to do. And Jay's impact on this sport has been used by every media wrestling member I've ever met, at least that's covering the college level stuff. So, and that's where the predominance of our awards come from, is the college and high school level. So even though we have international members, but it's like, you know, his relevance on the sport cannot be understated. So that's how we named the award after him. And it goes, and it's not given every year. We went 2 years without giving it. That wasn't for COVID, because sometimes it's like, okay, we don't want that to be an award we just give to somebody. Well, you know, Dan McCool got it posthumously previously, and, you know, he should have gotten it before then, because, you know, the gruff man that he was, he also had a lot of history in that brain of his, and he wrote a lot of books, and he did a lot for the sport and those relationships that he had. And I remember seeing him talk to people at Nationals that are, you know, 30 years, you know, after he covered them in high school, just having conversations about matches they wrestled. So it's not a lifetime achievement award, but it kind of is. And in some cases, it also is a catch-all award sometimes, where if somebody does something so good, like year we did the two books, Jamie Moffitt and T.R. Foley did the Saving Wrestling movement and chronicled them in two books. Like, those guys got an award because they did something chronicling a huge part of history. So it's not just necessarily, okay, you're 70, you win it, or you've won everything else, we give you this. This is something that takes some thought, and we don't give it out every year. So you know, and I made the point in the release, it's a release feature anyway, but, you know, if you've been covering wrestling or reading wrestling for the last 50, 60 years, it's really almost impossible for you to read something that John Hoke hasn't had his fingerprints on or Andy Hamilton's written. Because while John stepped away from the editorial side of things in 1981 to run the magazine, he's been typesetting, he's been taking pictures, he's been doing everything with that magazine. John Hoke still does. I mean, I worked for him for 18 months, and you know, he's still day-to-day operations, the subscriptions, the, you know, the layout, all that stuff. So he's been there since, you know, his dad passed away in 1981, and he's been running it ever since, but he was working it since the 60s. So, and then Andy, you know, I think is that generation of old school journalists that's come into the new school media role and has not missed a beat. So you're talking about two of the guys that have had a profound impact on this sport. And I know, as the association president, I can't think of two people that are less, you know, I don't want to say there's two people that don't have a few, I don't know, whatever. They're awesome guys. How's that?
No, they're really awesome guys. And like, I remember, you know, back when I was writing at the Daily Iowan, you know, working alongside Andy, you know, cause that was back when he was at the Register, you know, sat next to him and Wayne Dres at the 2012 Olympic trials when they were at Carver. You know, and then even, you know, through all my years at the DI, and then when I jumped to the Ames Tribune for a year, like, Andy was just, he was the dude. He was the wrestling guy. Like, he was that, his stories were what you read. If you wanted to know anything, he was a phenomenal, continues to be a phenomenal storyteller now that he's, you know, gone from the Register to track to Flow, you know, continues to just be that guy and just super well respected. And, you know, I don't talk to him as much anymore, but, you know, definitely followed his lead. You know, just,
yeah,
kind of
came time. And when it comes time for me to do anything, like, I mean, there's, you know, times we bounced conversations off each other about topics in wrestling media. You know, there's, you know, individuals that wanted credentials this year. I was like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, that kind of thing. And then there's a situation where actually probably one of the hardest stories I ever wrote is when I was with Amateur Wrestling News in the Open Mat. And I'm like, you know, if I have to write something on diversity, I have a guy back at the paper I used to work for named David Squires. I need to bounce something off somebody. It's going to give me perspective that, you know, the middle America white dude doesn't have. I call David Squires. Well, if there's something about writing or something like, hey, how do this is a good topic I've got here. You know, if I really need a, hey, what do you think here? Or bounce some ideas off, as Andy. So it was when Mike Pasillo came out. as gay. He's the first NCAA champion to come out publicly. And I, you know, a friend of mine kind of gave me that lead on that. And I'm just like, okay, this is not a topic. Sensitive topics are not really something I touch on. You know, I'm not an activist by any stretch of the imagination, except for maybe the sport of wrestling. And, you know, to have something that's going to be divisive in the wrestling community, that's going to be, ooh, how's this going to land? What's it going to be viewed as? And it's like, Andy, what do I do here? Cause I had 10,000 words of stuff and he was my call. I'm like, hey, let's, you know, and he helped me build that story. So I couldn't have done that story and given it the sensitivity that it deserved, based both from, you know, looking at it from the gay perspective and then looking at it from the wrestling perspective and then looking at it from the journalism perspective. There's three different ways you got to look at that. And if you do it wrong, you could be torched on all three, or you could be torched on one, two, three. I thought I wrote a fair story and a story that was, it wasn't an activism story. It was a story about a person. And Andy was the guy I went to on that.
Yeah, no, they fantastic ambassador for the sport of wrestling, for wrestling journalism, for just storytelling and sports journalism as a whole. Really awesome to see that those two guys get honored with those. I don't know John nearly as well. But everything I've heard and everything I've read, including your story, more than deserving. So really, really cool. Kind of see those guys get their due. Another thing I know I threw this on the list of things that we could potentially talk about. But wanted to mention Earl Smith from Intermat. He is wrestling, Insider News Magazine's Journalist of the Year, which comes after he won NWMA Journalist of the Year. And I believe Intermat also won the Outlet of the Year last year as well.
Yeah, they had a pretty good year last year. Well, Earl's since Earl's been there, they've definitely had a resurgence.
Earl's on a heater, man. Like, it's, which is really, really cool. You know,
come
another
on, Ricky, give him the heater.
Just, I don't know, man. Just like really cool to kind of see, you know, I know that what Willie Saylor bought Intermat and he, you know, one of his very first moves was to install Earl as the site editor and lead writer slash analyst slash whatever other title he wants to call himself, but
Dan Carlin of wrestling based on his Sudden History podcast. So
he's
to Sudden History. This is Earl Smith. Today we're going to be talking to multiple time All American Daryl Vasquez from Cal Poly. You know,
dude, if I close my eyes, you nailed it. no, that's, but I think
I
that
wear
gets to
hats for really shitty baseball teams. And
you said it, not me.
Yeah. Hey, knows it. Every time I see him, I go, hey, Earl, get some crap on your hat. I am not a Nats fan, but anyway,
No, I mean, just kind of, you know, in the same vein that Andy and John got, you know, the Jay Hammond Award, it's cool to see guys like Earl, good guys, hardworking guys that produce really good stuff, get their flowers and be honored in a way that everybody can recognize how cool they are. Cause I mean, you and I work in the media space, so we see up close how hard a lot of these guys work.
Well, I mean, hell, I've known Earl since we were teenagers, basically, you know, yeah. Like 18, 19. I mean, we've been early on the Virginia message boards and Virginia web stuff for a long time. I mean, he was at Manassas Park. I was at Pocosin. I mean, it was like, they were one of the single A big dogs. I was one of the double A big dogs. And it was like, you know, I mean, came to, you know, Earl's been, you know, he's got, we'll bring up names all the time, just random single A guy. Hey, you remember Jagger Rutledge? It's like, hey, you know, yeah, he beat Sammy Wolford. You know, he hates Strasburg, by the way. It's like his rival high school. He's like, yeah. And it's like, yeah, I don't even want to drive through that town. It just pisses me off. So, it's just like, you know,
I feel like you guys would have some great podcasts of just like guys remembering dudes from Virginia wrestling.
Salem stories. We can sit down and see how many times we heard the announcer go winner by pin, which is a thing, you know. Even Piles knows that one because he's, you know, he coached in that league for a while too. So.
Oh, that's
Earl does a great job, and it's cool to see that come through. And, you know, just again, it's not just everything he writes. It's just the organization, the foresight to bring people on, to give people opportunities. And that was one thing, Willie, to give him the credit there is, you know, when he thought about buying it, he's like, you know, we had the discussion. Let's like, you know, let's find a way to, you know, hey, you know what, you know, could make it like a, I don't want to say farm system, but a way to develop new wrestling names and new talent. So, that's one thing that Earl's given people with the opportunities. Like, hey, we're going to assign you a conference and you're going to create content for there. You don't give them too broad of a base. You get them dialed in and then they become an expert there. They know it and they create those relationships and they help the site, they help the sport and they help themselves at the same time. So Credit to Willie and Earl for having that vision to do that with Intermat, which is in its fourth iteration, I believe now.
I was on the
2.0 side. I think we're on the 4.0 side there now.
There we go. I had a list of things that
we got seemed... 15 more as we can say for the next show too, because I think they're all timely.
Well, some of the things that maybe aren't as timely that I just kind of wanted to throw out here. Trying to think, looking at this list. UWW canceled the 2023 World Cups. Men's and Women's Freestyle World Cups supposed to be in Coralville again at Extreme Arena. Did a fantastic job hosting it last December. Was really looking forward to it coming back to Iowa. I get why they, you know, decided to nix it. It's the year before the Olympics. USA Wrestling specifically, I know, usually does a senior national event right then to serve as an Olympic qualifier. So you got to imagine every other country's going through something similar. Just bummed because it was a really fun event, and I was looking forward.
I mean, I went to Baku for the Greco one last year too, so I did two of them. And
that's,
you know,
dedication.
And Baku's great. I went in 07. It was terrible. Baku is awesome now. They put a lot of money into that city. Those flame towers were not there when I was there the first time. So, but the World Cup, and Josh Schamberger, you know, he brings big events to the Extreme Arena. It has become a central hub for the sport of wrestling. High school, collegiate, you know, it's been a real central point for women's or girls wrestling in the state of Iowa. So I understand the reason there. I think the wording is a little different when they say support and buy-in. I don't think they mean fan support and buy-in. Although, again, we get to the fan situation. You know, your Hawkeye fans are Hawkeye wrestling fans. They're wrestling fans secondarily. If it's the Hawks are in there, it's full. But if it's former Hawkeyes, not necessarily. I mean, the biggest pop we got when I announced it was announcing Felicity Taylor as a Hawkeye, and the place popped. So, you know, I think it's a great event. But again, part of it too is we love dual meets as a fan perspective. They're really not that popular in wrestling worldwide. And the thing is, our wrestling cycles are different. You don't wrestle as much at the senior level because of the weight, you know, there's weight disparities. Like, it's just a little different. Some of these countries can't afford to fly to the U.S. And you got to do it sometimes twice, because, little tip, it's a lot cheaper to fly around Europe. Like, very, very cheap. To cross the Atlantic, you're almost looking minimum $1,000. Plus all the visa stuff you got to do to get into these countries. And sometimes you've got countries that are really good that don't really get along with our State Department. So you've got all those types of things. So, you know, and I think in Baku, Serbia got COVID. I mean, it was just like, you know, it's a great event, but it's really in a bad spot on the calendar. But there is no good spot in the calendar, because then now we've made the ranking series such a big event. And those are growing. And I think those are better to grow than the dual meet, than the World Cup. And the World Cup just doesn't, I love it. I love the concept of it. I just don't think the rest of the world shares it. And, you know, you don't want it to be a JV event. I think maybe you make it a U20 event or something like that. Maybe, you know, make it a junior event or something like that. But, you know, because we love our college stars, the chance to see our college stars. We see more people show up for Zane Rutherford in college than they do in, you know, senior level. So maybe let's look at that in the future. But having the same athletes going for Olympic qualifications and such in that time window does make it kind of a tough sell.
I did trade some messages with Josh Schomburger just about this. And one of the things I will share was he said, "We will run it back another time, ... or go bigger," with a wink emoji, to which I responded, "World championship bigger." Cause I know he wants to bring some
age
level.
He wants the junior worlds, right?
He wants he wants either cadet or juniors. I think specifically juniors, to come to Extreme Arena. He thinks they can pull that off. He knows they can pull that off. I believe they can pull that off. And I think that'd be, you know, that'd be a heck of an event to bring to Coralville, especially the way that the Team USA at the junior level has been wrestling the last few years. I think that'd be awesome.
Also, the staff there at the Extreme Arena is
A1.
Awesome. Like, you know, I'm in the headset talking, you know, kind of coordinated between the back of the house and me and Dort announcing at the World Cup. And even though one of their sound booth people went to the University of North Dakota, and I'm announcing at St. Cloud State, it was still cordial. with the hockey chatter there, but the arena, like, you know, it's first class staff, great to work with. So, I mean, every time something goes there, I'm like, I know Dort lives in town, so it's easier to get her to announce those events. And I'm like, Hey, I like back pocket.
Don't forget about me.
I like that spot. Anyway, But yeah, it's disappointing. I think the World Cups are cool. In Baku, it was a small venue. It was full. They were cheering for Greco. I mean, it was loud the whole time. I mean, Turkey, Azerbaijan, Iran. I mean, it was like da-da-da-da, horns nonstop. So part of that, too, is just, you know, the international wrestling fans a little different than we are. They're more proactive in terms of their cheering than reactive. So, yeah, it's...
Pan American Championships happened this past weekend. Down in Argentina. Generally a pretty good showing, I thought, for the U.S. Men's freestyle, 9 gold, 1 bronze. Greco, 6 gold, 1 bronze. Women's freestyle, 5 gold, 1 silver, 1 bronze, and a couple of head-scratching did-not-places, or at least Hella Maroulas didn't place.
Well, it wasn't just that. I mean, how many? I mean,
and then Dom Parrish took 5th, returning world champ.
And then also another 3 world champs got beat there. Justina D'Estacio from Canada also got beat. So, you know, it wasn't just... Yeah, it wasn't just, you know, the U.S. that was, I mean, think of team title. Okay, wheels aren't falling off of the bus, but it was just that for about 30 minutes there, I'm like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
what is going on?
It all happened, you know.
Oh, my goodness. I'm like, then I'm watching Helen's match. I'm like, what happened? And I put that on Twitter. And people are like, what happened? I'm like, you know, I mean, sometimes you have a bad match. Rather them have a bad match now.
Yeah.
Then, I don't know, Paris, Belgrade,
yeah,
you know?
Right. That was kind of my large takeaway, you know, because I think it was, you know, vast majority of this all happened on the same day, right? Like, Dom and Helen both lost, and I think, Kayla Miracle ended up taking bronze, too, so it was, everything was just kind of like...
Did she wrestle back for bronze? Because she hurt, when she got pinned, her ankle got trapped underneath pretty badly.
Results say that she came back and took bronze.
Okay.
So yeah, just it was like one weird day down there where it was just like, what the heck is going on?
And I mean, it was one of those like, eesh.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's like, I don't think it's a huge reason for worry, you know, but it was definitely like, it was just kind of a weird blip where it's just kind of like, oh, that's, you know, like I think if there are people out there, and I'm sure some people probably did who were paying close attention, who were like, you know, something's wrong, we'll never beat Japan. It's like, no, like sometimes you just, there's a weird energy to the day, and that's just kind of what happened down in Argentina. I think, I don't know, I'm not terribly worried, but I'm excited to see how some of these girls respond, some of these women respond at Final X, for example. Like, because that's, for a lot of them, that's the next chance they'll get to wrestle.
Yeah, we'll see how the Tempe contingent bounces back, because it was a lot of that contingent. So
yeah. That, which is weird because, like, they, you know, through the women's national championships, like U20, U23, and then at seniors, killed it, which is, you know, you don't expect anything less from Mark Perry coach squad. But yeah, just kind of a weird blip on the radar. And so we'll, you know, kind of see if they bounce back from that. Otherwise, you know, business as usual. I thought they did really well. I thought the Greco guys wrestled really well. Joe Rao bringing home gold. How about that?
Ciao. With Rao is back. And like I said, I think I said this the last time because we're talking about US Open. When Joe Rao is hungry and happy, he's hungry and happy.
Along those same lines, last thing I kind of had on my list that we'll get to at least right now. Tamra Mensah-Stock signing with WWE, effectively done wrestling. Another thing where it's like really awesome for her, but also like as a wrestling fan, just kind of like bummed.
Yeah, and there has been some chatter about, you know, was she going to come back after she won gold in Tokyo? And then, again, not winning in Oslo right afterwards, it's like, you know, maybe the hand was forced. Like, I believe FRL cited that as like, you know, I'm not going out like that. So, you know, I remember talking with Terry Steiner in Fort Worth at the trials, and, you know, he was telling us and Doris, like, you know, all the athletes, when they win the trials, are going to get a good pop. But it was like, you know, Tamara's hometown, you know, she's a Texan. So having the trials in her hometown, I was like, and Terry had kind of hinted to like, hey, can you give her a little extra pop to kind of, you know, give her that little extra motive, maybe a little extra push from the crowd. So, I mean, you know, I don't even think she wanted to wrestle this cycle after winning gold. And she, you know, she was such a, she's an awesome person. And
one of the best,
awesome wrestler too. And, you know, you see her development from, you know, taking losses that she shouldn't have against college kids to winning world medals and winning world titles and winning Olympic titles. So, you know, I guess we're selfish in a way where we want to see our greats continue on. And, you know, sometimes people have different goals and aspirations. And you know what? Her personality, her bubbliness is going to be very, very, I think it's going to be very well suited to that industry, that business, and you know they're professionals at it, because look at the how many people they put in to arenas for results that don't matter. They're good at what they do. So again, we're sad that we're not going to get to see her anymore from a wrestling selfishness standpoint. I'm happy for her. I'm happy for, you know, her, you know, she's been married a couple years now. It's just like, you know, people want to move on with life and potentially, you know, can't wrestle forever. You can perform forever, but you can't really wrestle forever. So there were probably some doubts there, you know, even before going into Tokyo. And I think, you know, she probably made the move, knowing what we know now in hindsight, probably later than she wanted to. But we'll wish her all the best, because she's just a phenomenal human being.
Yeah. No, ESPN originally broke the story. A couple of quotes that I think stood out. You know, you mentioned the whole coming back after what? So Olympic champ, world bronze a couple months later, and then she came back and won world title in 22. So here's what she told ESPN: didn't want my career to end on that note, referencing bronze in 21. So I did another world championships. I wiped the floor with everybody. And I was like, man, this is not fun anymore. I need a change.
Okay, something that's in the citation. Gotcha.
Yeah. Something in the back of my head said that's been itching at me and a dream of mine for I don't know how long. I just wanted to be in the WWE. She later went on to say, you know, I love watching the athletes in the ring, just doing what they do best. I see their personalities shine through the television and I see their strength. Just everything about them resembles me. And I've just wanted to be a part of that. And reading that, you know, I think back to her post Olympic gold medal interview where it was the full Tamra experience, right? Like she excited, you know, she dropped the fact that like, you know, where her family's from was, you know, cause she beat Nigeria in the gold medal match. Where her family's from, they're kind of, you know, they butt heads with Nigeria, you know, politically speaking. So like, you know, whatever, she started crying a little bit. She was singing a little bit, like talking about how they're doing karaoke to try and pass the time while they're waiting, you know, cause the wrestling's the last week of the Olympics. Just, I'm going to miss that from a wrestling part of it, but then also just, you know, seeing and hearing and reading that like, yeah, she's got other things she wants to do. And she checked the Olympics off her list. She checked multiple world championships off her list and she's ready to go do the next thing. Like, I get that. Like, I totally get that. And I'm with you. I'm going to miss her. You know, but I hope that she will continue to be a super strong advocate for women's wrestling, for USA wrestling, for just that sport. You know, even as she goes on and chases her WWE dreams.
Yeah, I'm going to probably wrap up this segment with this point. And it goes back to John Cena. Now, before some of you wrestling people that don't pay attention to the sports entertainment side of the world have to Google who this guy is.
He's the actor, right?
Have to, because most regular people know who this guy is. Maybe they sat through the Marine. You know, but John Cena is the most requested personality with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The impact that some of these WWE superstars, and I'm using the term WWE superstars because that's what they call their athletes. They call them WWE superstars. Whether they're a star or not is immaterial. Again, semantics with me. The John Cena as a WWE superstar has impacted so many people. And just think about what Tamira and her personality can bring to that potential. To make kids, she's made wrestlers and young women and young wrestling and boys and girls around the world in the United States smile, because she's just that infectious of a person, and her performance makes people smile, because when she drives somebody into the mat and with her, you know, with her puffs off to the side and you're just smile, having a hard time seeing because she's really, her eyesight's pretty bad without her glasses. But again, the hearts and all that stuff, like, she makes people smile no matter what she does. So you couple in the outreach that the WWE has with like the Make-A-Wish Foundation with John Cena and all the things they do to make kids smile and make families happy. And just there's an untapped world that she can dive into that I think a lot of us are missing. It's not just the performance aspect and getting that bag, getting that check, making money. Good for you. You know, having a career and, you know, you want to call it acting, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is. It's a profession. It's a business. It's been around for over 100 years. It grew out of our sport initially. And again, the things that they can do with their charity work and such can impact so many more people than just the WWE universe that tune in on Monday, Thursdays, and pay-per-views on once a month. So I think there's a lot more there that she can, you know, pop open and benefit the world with that we're not all thinking of when just when she says, oh, I'm going to WWE.
Couldn't have said that better myself. Excellent thing to end on here. You know, just today's show. It's a bummer that she's leaving, but like you said, and that's a really, I actually didn't know that about John Cena. That's a really good point that she, you know, she can broaden her reach, I think, a little bit more through the WWE. Tamra can. So, which is really, really exciting. I think we didn't get to everything on the list, but that's, you know, we're running almost 90 minutes here. That's all I've got.
If you figured this out, this is not going to just be a random thing here. We're kicking the tires on some of these things. So probably not the first time or last. It's definitely not the first time. It won't be the last time we have these long discussions on wrestling topics here in the room.
Which is fun, right? We're gonna kind of show up once a week, you know, through the off season, and just we're gonna come with a list of things that we think are interesting, and we'll just kind of go. So if you have things that you would like for us to discuss, or things that you also think are interesting that you would like to pass along, our doors are always open in some capacity. Always appreciate you jumping on, JB. Got anything that you're, before we sign off here, got anything that you're working on or anything else that's coming out or things that people need to be aware of? I'll keep your links to find you in the show notes here so that people can continue to seek you out.
Well, let's see, where are we at? We're on May the 11th. So Wrestling Shirt A Day will continue throughout again. Hashtag Wrestling Shirt A Day in May. Tag your programs and whatnot. Looking to schedule my flights over to Final X. I know that I'm looking, I got at, Hall of Fame weekend coming up 1st of June, Final X and things of that nature. Then looking at the schedules, building them out. You know, I've already got my hockey schedule for next year. Looking at the world events next year. So yeah, getting just really kind of just finishing out the month of May, getting those last Gray Simons interviews done to get that episode and that series for Etched in Stone done. And then we got June and July is going to be busy. And then 2023-24, the rest of that's going to be just a zoo. So looking forward to it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's all we got today, guys. We'll probably be back sometime next week. Until then, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast. Subscribe to the Des Moines Register. Subscribe to Matt Talk Online. Also sign up for JB's wrestling newsletter. If you haven't already, that's how I start every one of my mornings, with just kind of scanning to see, one, if I made the cut, and two, just whatever else in wrestling news is going on, because sometimes that's where I pull topic for our conversations. So be sure to sign up for that. You can find links to do all of that, as well as stories from this past week, in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, you guys. We will talk again soon.